You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 87, is that right? 87 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast from BlizzPro.com. Today is November 27th, 2016. Happy Thanksgiving week to you Americans. Happy normal week to everybody else. And we've got a pretty great show for you, but let's go ahead, go around the horn, introduce the crew. First, from Saskatoon, Canada, it's Kevin Ovdestead. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Good to be back. I'm excited. We've got lots of fun stuff to talk about on this week's show, and I just think it's been kind of a fun ride. Ever since we got back from BlizzCon, there's been lots of new cards and interesting things to talk about every week. Hearthstone just feels like it's ready for something fresh, and I've been more excited to talk about the game lately than play it in a lot of respects. So I think we've got a couple of fun things to talk about
today. Yes, I'm so glad you said that. I'm going to go back to that. But first, let's go to Kansas City with our very own JR Cook. Hey, JR, how are you doing?
Hey, guys. I am very thankful to be here this weekend. Many thanks to you guys for having me on the show once again, like we have since the beginning. I just wanted to spread the thanks out there and be thankful for things.
Well, man, hey, that's cool. You do so many nice, cool things. How's your little holiday greeting card thing been going?
Not too bad. I mean, our listeners are pretty awesome, and they really want greeting cards. So I got bombarded. I was actually surprised last week that I even got more, because I thought you guys, anybody that wanted one, would have already sent them in to me. But got a ton more this week. If you guys want a greeting card, just email me, jr@jrcook.net or jrcook@blizzpro.com. I don't remember which one I was using. They both come to me. If you want a greeting card, I'm going to send them out like this week. So get them in.
It's because Kevin and I are such good salesmen. We brought that home for you. You're welcome.
I'm more than happy to send them out, though, if it makes people happy.
Hey, that's makes what I'm here me for. Happy. So great.
Yeah, it's a cool idea.
I love it. Oh man, we've got Hearthstone to talk about. Kevin, I'm in the same boat, I think, as you, where I am definitely really enjoying Hearthstone, but not so much playing it right now. I'm kind of in study mode. I'm spending a lot less time playing the game. I'm spending a lot more time watching streams, reading guides, watching tournaments. And at first I felt guilty. I'm like, no, I need to play. And I'm like, honestly, when I think back at when I feel like I've learned the most about Hearthstone and gotten better as a player, it all hasn't just been when I've been playing a crap ton of Hearthstone. It's been a combination of both. Sometimes when it's playing, yeah, I'm playing 30 games a day for a whole month straight. Other times it's, you know, I'm just really happy to sit back and watch and, you know, do the whole pull up a tournament, guess the plays, and, you know, try to rationalize plays. And, you know, that's kind of where I am right now, and I'm okay with it, at least until Mean Streets come out, and then I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go back in. But right now, it's just study mode. Back to Hearthstone fundamentals, you know?
I feel like that's something that happens with the cycle of releases. Like even in other trading card games, it usually feels that way because you get to that point where the meta just starts becoming really stale because it's been figured out and no one's really going to explore new ideas with it because they're like, this is the game right now. This is what's going to happen. You can make little adjustments here and there, but you're not going to really see anything new and super groundbreaking. And it gets really stale at that time. But when a new set is coming out, you get really excited for that because you're like, okay, these new cards are going to come out. we can theorycraft now, figure out what they're going to do. And maybe that's the point, is you're going to think about the game a lot more than you're actually going to play it, because at this moment in time, it's a lot more exciting to theorycraft and think about those new cards and think about the decks that you're going to play than it is to sit down and play the same old decks that you've been playing for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, the fatigue is definitely real. I think everybody's just at that point. I mean, I know a lot of people, like, in the last couple of days, I've seen jump on and just, like, they're doing the I need to hit rank 20 for the card back thing. And obviously, end of the month's coming up. If you haven't, definitely get in there and do that. But yeah, I mean, I made it up to rank 5 and I messed around with a few different decks, but I've mostly just been, you know, finish my quests, try to grind out the last few games I need for Golden Rogue and be done with that. But it's definitely not like you're going to see anything new and exciting. You're not going to come up with some clever meta breaker that hasn't been found. Like, the time for that has been and gone. So at this point, if you want to play competitively, you choose one of the 3 or 4 reliable archetypes that will win games and you go play and win games. Or maybe now is a good time to say, you know what, I can take, like John said, a week or two to study, reflect, learn, watch. I honestly find I get a lot more out of that than I think maybe people realize. Like, when you stop and you force yourself to analyze what another player is doing when you don't have the time constraint pushing on you, right? I'm not sitting there trying to worry about roping out. I can just watch and calculate and think. Like, it's definitely, it's a different skill set and you learn a lot from doing it. So I think that's an okay place to be, but yeah, I'm so ready. I'm so ready for new cards.
Go ahead, JR.
Oh, I was just going to say, I will say though, that I have been playing a lot of Hearthstone lately. Just trying out some different kind of aggro decks, since the meta has been very mid range. I wanted to see if anything aggro related could really work. And I had a lot of good luck with an aggro Beast Druid deck. And you know, it was something a little bit different that wasn't seeing a lot of play, and I saw some pretty good luck with it. I haven't gotten as high rank as I have in the past, just because I haven't been able to play as much, even though I have the last week or so. I wasn't able to at the beginning of the month, but you know, you can try out things like that and still have fun. But for the most part, I'm with you guys. I've been enjoying watching some streams and things like that more so than playing.
I want to go down that rabbit hole in just a second. We're going to go off on a tangent on that, but I do want to ask you first, JR, how'd you do on Heroic Tavern Brawl the week before? You weren't on the show last week, so we didn't get to hear your Heroic Tavern Brawl experiences.
Right. So the very first one I did, I played Midrange Shaman. Because I figured that, you know, I joined the meta, and I went 1-3 and got beat by other mid-range shamans. And I had a lot of really unlucky breaks in that game, in those games, that felt like I had the win and then it just got turned around. And I don't think I misplayed. I just had bad luck.
Okay.
I played again later on in the week, after I was like, okay, the dust has settled. I'm going to try one more time, spend my $10. I only wanted to play it once, but I decided to play it again. And I got 8 wins that time playing my discard warlock deck.
Nice. You in that discard warlock deck.
Yep. I decided I wanted to try it because I built it and going, man, I wanted to use that for this tavern brawl. And I was afraid to use it because I'm like, I want to spend $10 and do it horribly. And I'm like, well, I already did horrible with Midrange Shaman. Let's give it a shot, see what happens. And it did way better.
Nice. All right. Tangent time. So we've been talking, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and it's very weird because my games that I'm like heavily playing on, Hearthstone is the only one where I can say you can get so much out of watching, almost as much as you can out of playing. I would say sometimes more, sometimes less. It definitely varies. But I was sitting down to play Overwatch, and I've watched a ton of Overwatch over the last couple weeks. And I'm like, I know the spots, I know the comps, I know the best players for each hero. I'm really confident with that. And it didn't help me. It didn't help me all that much when I'm just a crappy PC shooter player. Whereas Hearthstone, I'm like, man, I haven't gotten to play in 4, 5, 6 days. But I remember watching whatever, Savitz or Brian Kibler. I was watching them play against this deck. And I remember this is the kind of deck, and they were talking about it. And I think it's really interesting that Hearthstone arguably is one of the only games really kind of out there where you get so much from not playing it. And I've been really appreciative of that. And I've also quit beating myself up about, like, I'm like, I can't play. I cannot play mid-range shaman one more game. I'm done. I'm tapped. I'm done. And I'm like, I'm not ready to play around with just some goofy decks, because you guys know me. I love winning so much. Winning is so much fun for me. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to watch. I'm just going to sit back and watch, take notes. And it's been really great. And I guess I would say, if you are feeling the fatigue, it's okay. You can get better elsewhere, but make sure you're still playing. Hearthstone is still a game you want to play, but it's been really nice to not have to, you know, worry about that as much.
Yeah, I could totally actually riff on that a little, because I think in all of the games I've ever played competitively, like when I played competitively in StarCraft, there was always kind of that ability to go back and, like, you'd sit and you'd study your replays and you'd do all these things to get better. But it was more of a balance. Like, I needed to spend X many hours per day playing in order to maintain the skill set, in order to have fast enough reaction times and memorize the timing attacks and that stuff. There was muscle memory that was important to some of those games, right? Knowing how to use the different abilities on different units mattered a lot in StarCraft. It matters a lot in Heroes of the Storm. It matters a lot to raiding in WoW. It matters a lot to people who played Diablo competitively. But Hearthstone, you don't really have the same raw manual skill set to worry about. So there's always going to be more value to watching, reading, learning, understanding. I think in a way it's kind of unfortunate, because there aren't a lot of things that you can do to practice to get better, right? Like, you, if you could sit and practice to play Hearthstone better, the things you would practice would be skills like keeping track of what cards you haven't played out of a deck without writing them down, right? And stuff like that is really hard to practice in a live environment. So what do? Make yourself 30 flashcards with your deck written out on them? Like, who knows? But yeah, it's definitely the game where you can get the most value out of watching a friend, talking someone through their plays, watching a stream, because you do learn stuff, and it matters so much more than how fast you click or how good your muscle memory is. That stuff doesn't really apply to Hearthstone.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah, it's actually totally fun to do, which is nice.
I think the biggest thing for someone like me that is probably in the upper area of age range for, you know, some gamers that play some of these Blizzard games, especially like anybody that plays like an FPS or an RTS or anything that really has that Twitch skill. It's hard for me to play those games, even though I really enjoy them, because I just no longer have the reflexes like I did when I was in my, you know, teenage years or early to mid 20s. So playing something like Hearthstone and being able to still engage and feel like I'm still, you know, being able to be very competitive in a video game is something that is really huge for me. And that's why I personally love the game, is just because I know that I can't be as competitive in these other games that do take that extra, skill set that once you hit, you know, kind of in your 30s and mid 30s and up, you may not have quite the reaction times that you're used to having when you're younger.
Better hope your opponent doesn't play Nozdormu on you, JR.
Right. Maybe that's what Nozdormu is. Is in 10 years, that's going to be the new meta. It's going to be for those older players that just, oh man, 15 seconds, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's so good. I love the if you want to raise your APM in Hearthstone, play against a friend who's playing a Nozdormu deck and you have to play Mill Rogue.
Yeah.
That's, oh god.
Or Yogg-Saron. Any Yogg-Saron deck too, pretty much. Do you in fat. Okay, thank you for going down that tangent with me. I thought it felt kind of timely I think as the holidays come around, there's like a struggle, at least for me. It's like, what am I doing outside of video games? What am I doing for the shows and podcasts? What am I doing? And you know what? There are ways to get better without sitting in front of your computer screen, you know, slapping down the, you know, your stupid fairy claws. What are they called? Oh my God. This is why I hate doing a Hearthstone podcast. We're going to get this. The 1 mana, 1/3 spell. Spirit claws. Fairy claws. I like fairy claws better.
We're going with fairy claws.
Fairy claws. Oh my God.
At least you didn't say Santa Claus.
This is why people think I don't play Hearthstone. It's because I can't remember Hearthstone card names. I can describe it to you. I could probably even draw it for you, but I can't tell you what the name is. Anyways, you know, there's lots of ways to get going. JR, I know you had one more thing you wanted to talk about. You're doing an Extra Life live stream, not next weekend, but the weekend after. What? Yep.
Right. Yep. Extra Life charity. I'm doing that again this year. Since Extra Life fell on BlizzCon, I couldn't do it on, you know, its date. So I had to find one. The weekend of December 9th. It would be Friday night. I'll stream for a few hours. I'll have a full schedule up later this week. But it'll be Friday, Saturday, and part of Sunday. I'm going to divide it up in 3 days instead of trying to do 24 hours all at once, because I tried doing that last year and I decided I'm unfortunately too old for that anymore. I've got to divide it up. So
you're the December 9th, that weekend, 76 of 24 hour live streams.
Yep. So I'm going to divide it up in a few days and call it good. I'll be more awake. It'll be more fun. And that way you guys don't see me in hour 18 half dead and just sitting there going drooling as I'm trying to make sense of this Nazdormu meta that's going to pop up when I play.
One of my guilty pleasures is going on YouTube and watching Twitch streamer fails. And a lot of them are when they fall asleep while they're streaming. I love those. So I don't know what you're talking about, Jer. If you fall asleep on stream, I'll donate $100 straight to charity. You know what? I'm gonna do it anyway because now I sound like entertain me now for charity. That yeah, that's the worst. No. But
But Extra Life is it's a great charity. This will be my fourth or fifth year doing it. All the money goes to the Children's Miracle Network. All the money that I would be raising goes to the one here in Kansas City at the KU Medical Children's Hospital. And so you just join there and watch me play some video games and hopefully give some money to help me raise some money for some kids. Last year, I think we raised $650. So I'm hoping to do roughly about the same this year.
That's amazing.
And I'm going to do it over at Twitch on this channel, twitch.tv/BlizzPro.
Awesome. Great. Be there. All right. Okay. We gotta move on. Let's talk about some news.
This week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
All right. Before we get into the news, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. Thank you so much for your support of the show. If you want to support Well Met going into the holiday season, we would love to have you join us in our Facebook group and, you know, play some games after and do all those things. Head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. So, Kevin, did you know that we've got a new card set coming out soon?
I had heard a rumbling that maybe some new cards might come out.
Yeah, it's only the last thing we've been doing for like the last 4 weeks. So, you know, welcome here, Kev. See, you fell right into my trap. One way plays along. Ha ha. Anyways, so we've got the big at least the big expansions that I can remember. There's almost always been a stream where they just dump a buttload of cards on us. And we've got one coming up here soon, don't we, Kev?
We do. So for those of you who haven't caught the news already, there is a post up on the official Hearthstone website But there's going to be a live reveal with senior designer Matt Place, as well as Mr. Dan Frodan Chu himself, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Pacific on the official Hearthstone Twitch channel. They're going to go through, my guess would be, most, if not all, of the unrevealed cards from Mean Streets up to this point. So tells us a few things. Number one, it tells us that they're going to have some particular classes they probably have to play on stream, because we're missing a lot of information about a couple of them. But it also likely indicates that the set is coming out maybe as early as later this week.
Thank you. I mean, do we need one of these, right?
Yeah.
Give us new cards. Give us new cards. And no more card reviews. No more card reviews. Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, these are always fun. And it's kind of interesting. We've done one. I think Frodan has been there for the last three. But we did one with, I know at least one with Ben Brode. I know Yong was there for one as well, maybe more. And so I think this is the first time, though, that we've seen Matt Place.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
Yeah.
That'll be cool. I hope he has as good of a laugh as Ben Brode, because I need a new sounder. But this should be pretty good. By the time you're hearing this, though, unless you're with us on the live stream, it will have already come and gone. So we probably don't need to speculate too much, because it'll just all change by the time
people get
to hear
this. It'll probably be wrong right after we heard it. I do know that there's 34 cards left to be revealed. So it's not too far off that we will see them all during the live stream. I really don't think we're going to see it this week. I think we're going to see it next week. If we do see it this week, I think it'll be Thursday, December 1st.
Well, they said early December.
So December 1st, I feels like could potentially happen, but I really feel like it's going to be the following week.
So basically, December 1st, 5th, or 7th. Those are kind of the big dates, right? Because we usually get stuff on Tuesday or Thursday.
Yeah, we had talked back when we did kind of our initial impressions that it was likely going to be that first full week in December. Right. It just... Traditionally, the lag time from the final reveal to the set going live is not very long. So I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, at this point, it won't be any later than the 8th. And all we're doing is kind of, splitting hairs over, does it come out, maybe earlier in the week on a Tuesday? Does it come out later this week? Because they're just likely the patch that puts all the content into the game for Hearthstone goes up tomorrow. And the limiting factors become things like how fast can they get the official iPhone and Android clients and stuff updated and pushed through. So there's nothing to say that they couldn't just have that stuff ready. And if the stuff's all out there and ready to go, flip the switch this week, right? They've clearly picked a time frame, and I would not be surprised at all if they decided to go ahead with next week. But there's been times where they do these reveal streams and they turn around and the whole set's in our hands 3 days later. That's happened before.
Right. That's the one thing that the Hearthstone team is extremely good at, is they don't mess around. Like, they make an announcement and bam, it's there. Or they don't really tease announcements too much. They don't do like a Sombra ARG style, thing.
We don't find it. It's not like Legion, where we found out in like August and we got it in December. Right. It's usually 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks.
Well, and especially once the whole set is known, they don't want you to know all the cards and have nothing to do after that. Like, they're really good about having this like drip feed trickle of content updates and excitement, so that there's little bits of hype going on all the time. You see something new on Twitter, you see something new on Reddit, and just kind of drip, drip, drip for a couple of weeks, which has been fine. It's actually been, I think, okay. The pace this time hasn't felt really monotonous. But as soon as they do this last set, like, there's only really 4 classes that they have left to do any meaningful number of cards for, right? It's Hunter, Mage, Warlock, and Warrior are the 4 that aren't more or less finished. So they could very quickly just like, boom, here's what's left. Here's the cards you haven't seen with those classes. And the set will be out on Thursday. Like, that's, I think that's entirely realistic. If it
I think it is realistic too. I think if we don't see it December 1st, we'll see it the following Tuesday.
I think we definitely get the release date tomorrow.
I leave that to you.
Okay. You were probably correct, yes.
Bold prediction! Here it is.
Okay. Bold prediction.
So yeah, so tune in for that. Hopefully it was great. And what we should do next time something like this happens, where we have a Sunday show and a Monday event, is we should just talk about it as if it already happened. Like,
we'll talk about it past tense when it hasn't happened yet.
We'll have a well-met time machine and be like, we're going to go 12 hours into the future. Well, 24 hours into the future and talk about the reveal that's
Talk about that crazy up. Warlock card that got revealed.
Yeah.
Warrior Legendary that's going to change everything.
Yeah. Yep. Anyways, okay, so we've also got another thing. So one of the game designers, Dean Ayala, stopped by on Reddit to talk a bit about Arena and more specifically Rogue in Arena. So those Arena players who are listening to Well Met, you're going to get some Arena talk this week. You're welcome. So JR, what's been going on with this one?
Oh, the biggest thing is I think players, especially on the subreddit, the Hearthstone subreddit, and elsewhere as well, are fairly upset because there's a huge controversy at the beginning of the year about Blade Fury getting nerfed. And one of the reasons why Blizzard had said that Blade Fury was nerfed is because it opened up the design space for them. And a lot of people, you know, are thinking, well, that means, you know, they're going to design better weapons and things like that. They kind of gave him a pass in Old Gods and One Night in Karazhan. But the problem is with this new set, there still doesn't seem to be any like new weapon for Rogue right now. There's still a couple cards not revealed. And it looks like Rogue just doesn't really have some of the things that they players feel that they need. That it's very minion. It's becoming very minion based on curve, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of identity behind it. So Dean came to the subreddit and talked about that basically. And Kevin, I will lead that. I'll hand that off to you. On
pass the torch. Pass the torch. Yes.
Well, I mean, this is, I don't know. I mean, Dean is credit where credit's due. I guess let's back up for 1 second. One of the things that we spoke about a lot on this show, and that I think was a big thing in the Hearthstone community in general up until a couple of months ago, was we didn't feel like we were hearing enough in terms of public facing communication from the Hearthstone team about what's happening. What is your design philosophy? Where is this game going to be 5 years from now? And that was feedback that I know personally I gave to some of the people on the Hearthstone team was, yeah, we'd like to have a better indication of what the future holds for Hearthstone so that we can understand and that we're, you know, actually kind of a part of this and not just along for the ride. So Dean, to his credit, has been doing a really great job of answering a lot of questions, really engaging with the community. And the questions he answered over on Reddit are, I think, great examples of that, right? Like he didn't just come in and like drop one quick, like, here you go, this is my thought. Like he actually stuck around and talked to people about it. So, I mean, it's tough, right? So on the Rogue stuff, I don't know. His answers are good. They're valid. They make a lot of sense. But I think people just feel like they're expecting things they're not getting from the design space argument, right? I think that's what this comes down to. We keep talking about design space, and when they changed Warsong Commander, right, then you could watch and you could see people go back and say, okay, yeah, I understand now why they had to change it, because look at all these minions that got printed that could never have possibly been printed while Warsong Commander worked the way it used to. It's very visible to people that design space argument holds water when you print something like Wobbling Runts, right? You could never have printed that card with the old Warsong Commander. But you flash forward to something like the Blade Flurry argument, right? Or the debate, I guess, that raged back and forth about Force of Nature versus Savage Roar, stuff like that. Those, again, became design space arguments. And the Blade Flurry one, people just aren't happy with the outcome, because I think what they misread into that was, we're taking away Blade Flurry, within reason, we're taking it away, but we're going to come back to you with more weapons and more things to make that style of rogue feel competitive again, because we don't want rogue to be this one trick pony where all you can do is cycle cards and play spells. That just hasn't come to fruition yet. And everybody's looking at the new cards, especially in light of what's the worst brewmaster that got printed? Ferryman.
The fairy. That's what I meant. Fairy claws.
There you go. Fairy claws was ferryman. Okay.
Oh god.
But that's where all the attention is coming from, because they printed this card that looks awful, facilitates nothing, is just bad. Fundamentally bad, right?
Purify.
And
sorry.
Yeah, that's the comparison that got drawn here. And honestly, like I think he's totally fair in saying, like, we don't want every class to have all the tools. We want sometimes for there to be gimmick cards that do things that are meant to be fun. It's difficult, I think, to tell people that if you really want to just play Rogue, if Rogue is the class you want to play, this is how you have to play it. Like, you have to play this combo-oriented, spell-driven Rogue. If you plan on running a rogue and you don't want to run Auctioneer, you're going to have a bad time. And I mean, I've tried many times. It's not a fun experience. I'll be the first person to admit it. The whole class needs cantrips and coins and cycle and
you
stuff.
You like on what your 12th week for your last 100 wins.
Oh,
of
it's
rogue?
Awful. I need another like 70 and it's just painful, dude. You have no idea. So I mean, I get it. And I think it's tough because I, for one, really appreciate Dean going and saying this stuff. Like, I really love that he's out there explaining the philosophy and why they're doing it and what the, like, he goes and he actually gives specifics, right? And he says stuff about how, like, you know, certain classes should have certain weaknesses and like, gives examples, right? About how they don't want Rogue to have top-tier AoE. They don't want it to have top-tier healing. They don't want it to have a top-tier taunt. That's not how they want Rogue to play. And I mean, I think we knew that, but we've just never heard them say it. So now that's boom, done. Like, that is now an established thing. We understand that that's the constraints they're trying to work within, is we don't want Rogue to feel like it plays the same way as, you know, and I mean, what's a class with good AoE, good healing and a good taunt? Not Druid.
Paladin
kind of Shaman,
is probably the
Shaman.
Closest, right?
Yeah. But so, I mean, there are classes that play that way. Rogue's just not going to be one of them. And I totally get that. And frankly, I'm just thrilled that we got this information at all. So,
yay. Yep. I agree.
That's my long-winded thumbs up.
And to be fair, like, we're always going to have a class that's going to underperform. We're always going to have classes that do underperform. We've had this conversation a year ago about Shaman.
Yeah, Shaman tier means something very different now.
Yeah.
Hey?
Oh, yeah. Now
go back and listen to... our Shaman needs better early game conversations.
We're so sorry, guys. We did this.
And then, last expansion, it was Priest, and it's still, but it looks still like this Priest. Expansion might fix some of that, maybe. But we had that conversation about Shaman back in the day, and it eventually did. Priest, it looks like maybe might be turning that corner, and Priest might be very strong fairly soon. And when that happens, another class will drop down. And I think we're just going to constantly kind of see that flux. So maybe it's going to be Rogue's turn to shine next time. We don't know. Maybe they're still trying to figure out the identity of Rogue. And Rogue has always been one of those classes that they've always had difficulty with since the beginning of the game. Because Rogue was seriously, seriously overpowered, you know, when the game was first in early beta. And then they had to nerf its hero power. And ever since then, it's been kind of, you know, downhill from there, except for Miracle Rogue. That seems to be the one Rogue deck that really seems to work really well, or has worked really well in the past. But since then, it's like Rogue, it feels like Rogue is still trying to find its identity and how it's going to work. And I think Shaman had that same issue a year ago, because we thought totems were worthless, and then they started becoming good.
Right. I think something, and I've been thinking about Rogue a bit, and it's tough, right? Like, is the class identity for Rogue weapons? Now, I'm going down the lore route. Obviously, in Hearthstone, they could make it whatever they want. But down the lore route, like, what makes a Rogue? And for me, it's like sneaky, stealth, you know, type of stuff. But stealth is really dangerous when it comes to Hearthstone. You can't use stealth in Hearthstone like you can.
Although they
in
did
World
added
of Warcraft.
A lot to set.
They
this
did.
Upcoming set, they've added a lot.
They did. And even then, how often outside of the occasional, oh my God, Stranglethorn Tiger. Yes, got it. Outside of Stranglethorn Tiger, and you see Conceal from Rogue, which is one of those, Rogue identity pieces. How often do you see something that's actually stealth? Very rarely, if ever, really, besides those two cards. So it's tough. It's definitely hard to translate what you're used to seeing in like World of Warcraft and making that an effective CCG mechanic, like stealth or charge or weapons. Like those are all easy, not easy, but they're more accessible to balance around in something like an MMO, whereas in a CCG, those are dangerous words. Weapons and spells and stealth and charge. So I don't know.
Well, that's the problem, right? Is like you can go down the list of all the classes, and within reason, you can pretty easily name like a one or two card combination of things that's supposed to be the win condition for a given class. Like I can, without much difficulty, say like, yeah, if I'm going to play Druid, my win condition plan is typically going to be Big Taunts or Savage Roar, right? If I'm going to play a class like Mage, my win condition is going to be Fireballs, or, you know, like it's just not a complex thing to identify the win condition. And unfortunately for Rogue historically, that hasn't been the case. When back in GBG, when you had Tinker Sharp Sword Oil and Blade Flurry, and you were trying to find ways to pull that combo off, like that was actually a win condition that didn't involve necessarily cycling through the entire Rogue deck. And that's really the problem, is that every other thing Rogue has ever been able to do, like I've been playing Questing Adventurer Rogue and it's awful. Like it's just, you lose 1 in 10 games because you just don't see the cards you need. You just don't draw stuff. You can't cycle and you lose. But I can't play to a game where, like, every game when I'm done, whether it's win or lose, it's with 4 cards left in my deck. Like I've drawn through everything to find all the pieces to pull off that one swing turn that mattered. And then I just have to pray that my, 18-14 Questing Adventurer survives for a turn. There's no deadly shot or whatever. That's the class in a nutshell. I don't know. I think the core Rogue set doesn't do a good job of explaining how you're supposed to win games as Rogue.
Yeah, I think one of the cards that you mentioned is a good example of a card that I think Rogue needs to see more of now, and we haven't seen since GBG, and that is Tinker Sharp Sword Oil. Say that 3 times fast. That does a couple things that I think Rogue does identify with. It made a weapon stronger, which I think is important. It had the combo ability, which is Rogue's, special ability that they have. And it also helped make the minions on your board stronger as well, if you popped off that combo. What made that card so powerful was because of Blade Flurry. And Blade Flurry was the problem. It wasn't the Tinker Oil. It was, Blade Flurry. So I would hope that they go back and create more spells like that buff up your weapons, or maybe gives your weapon a special ability. Like maybe it gives your weapon a death rattle effect that does something, or, things like that they haven't really explored yet. And I think that's something that they need to look more into doing, is having spells that buff your weapon and also possibly might do something on a combo to the field of play in some way, whether it's buffing a minion or doing something else in that case. I think they're missing that, and they need to do that more with Rogue.
Okay. Oh, we have to do card reviews. We still have to do. Oh, all right.
Strap in, friends.
All right. We're about to go into the mean streets of Gadget Sand, talk about some card reviews. Let's do it.
Ah, Gadget Sand, the city of opportunity.
Ah, yes. the city of opportunity. So we've got quite a bit that we want to talk about this week. But before we do, we saw something new come out this week that I don't think that we were totally expecting. And that is the Jade Golem. Kevin, what is a Jade Golem, or what is this mechanic? It's not a mechanic necessarily. It's not a card. It's really weird. It lives in the upside down, you know, like Stranger Things lives in the upside down. And how would you explain this new Jade Golem thing that we've got going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually a reasonably understandable mechanic. Basically, for the Jade Lotus classes, so that's Druid, Rogue, and Shaman, you have the ability to play cards that summon a Jade Golem. And the Jade Golem, as it's summoned, basically every time you summon every time you play a card that summons a Jade Golem, it's going to summon a Jade Golem with progressively larger stat blocks. So the first time you play, maybe it's Jade Blossom in Druid, right? The 3-mana card that's basically Wild Growth, but summons a Jade Golem. That first Jade Golem is going to be a 1/1. The next time you play a card that summons a Jade Golem, the new Jade Golem will be a 2/2. Now, that's not going to modify your existing Jade Golem the way that something like the C'Thun buff cards did. And that's an important distinction to draw. When you played a card that said, give your C'Thun +2/+2 wherever it is, it would buff the C'Thun that was on the board. The Jade Golem summon will always add a new Jade Golem. So basically, you're going to continue to summon a new version of this minion over and over. And each time you do, it will be progressively more powerful.
So it's a second minion every time you play that, is what you're saying. So if you play it like Jade Spirit is a 4-mana 2/3 with a battle cry that reads, summon a Jade Golem, you get a 2/3, and depending on how many Jade Golems you have played before it, that second minion will be a 1/1 or a 2/2 or a 3/3 and so on and so forth.
Right. And so what it does, I think, and what it's really interesting about it is that this creates a mechanic that basically allows you to trade early game efficiency for mid game and late game superiority. Because most of the cards, like if you look at something like I'll use Jade Blossom again. Okay. Jade Blossom, 3-mana druid spell, summons a Jade Golem and gives you an empty mana crystal. If you play that on curve, right, and that's all you are able to do at that stage of the game is give yourself a mana crystal and a Jade Golem, it's going to come out as a 1/1 token. That's arguably straight up worse than doing something like playing a Wild Growth and a Living Roots. Now, obviously, that's two cards instead of one, yada, yada. But there's a lot of things about the Jade Golem mechanic that say you're going to get less than what you're paying for the first few times you do it, but it's going to continue to scale. So if you build your deck to have multiple Jade Golem summoning cards, minions or spells, you're actually going to find that at some point you start to get a lot of value, right? Maybe you play the Jade Behemoth in Druid. That's a 6-mana 3/6 taunt minion with a battle cry that reads summon a Jade Golem. Well, if that summons out a 4/4 or a 5/5 Jade Golem, right, all of a sudden you're talking about getting, what is that, 8/11 in stats for 6-mana across two bodies, one that has a taunt. Like, the efficiency becomes very, very powerful. It also means that you always have these little effects that kind of snowball over time. You're not going to get to the late game and pull up a card like the Jade Idol, right? That's kind of the one that everybody's looking at in Druid. You're not going to pull one up at the end of the game and think, oh, well, this is worthless. You're going to play a 1-mana spell, and it's going to summon like a 12/12 minion, right? So it's a strategy that revolves around asking more questions than your opponent can answer later in the game by giving them some opportunity in the early game to maybe rush you down before you get your Jade Golem synergies running. Because the first two or three, depending on which cards you play, the 1/1, the 2/2, the 3/3 as they come out, will be worse than what you could have gotten with a comparable card.
Yeah.
And so, I think...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think one of the distinctions also to make is each time it gets bigger, its mana cost also goes up with it. So when you summon the 4/4, it is a mana cost of 4. So if it does get like returned to your hand or something like that, that it's going to cost you 4 mana to replay it. That goes all the way up to 10 mana However, the Jade Golem can become all the way up to a 30-30, a 10 mana 30-30, and that's its max. So the biggest you can get is a 30-30.
Boo!
Which is crazy.
Got it. I hit two buttons there, and I'm not even going to edit it. Not even going to do it. Oh, so, okay. Okay, so I need to ask the important question. You know me, I ask the tough questions. So on a scale of Joust to Discover, where do you think this Jade Golem mechanic lies? Kev, I'll let you go first. So in other words, bad to great. Where do you think this one's gonna live?
Okay, I'm gonna clarify my answer here a little bit. From a design perspective, I think it's great. I think this is something that's a lot of fun. It forces people to think about a new, it's something you have to keep track of. It's a new variable, right? And that adds a lot of depth to the game because you have to now account for, well, what happens if my opponent plays like a 2-mana minion that summons a Jade Golem and it comes out at 10-10 in the late game. Like it's just one more thing that will keep the game from being decided strictly by who curves out the best or who has the right removal spells on the right turn. Like there's going to be things about it that will be really exciting from a design perspective. From a playability perspective, I'm not sure that it hits the right notes. This is something that's available to Druid, Shaman, and Rogue, right? If you look at the cards that have been added so far that interact with this mechanic, Shaman, I don't think is going to care. I think Shaman already has so much good synergy with totems. They've got so many other really powerful options with, you know, overload synergy and stuff. Like this just doesn't really feel like it makes sense.
It might care when standard rotates.
Sure. In the spring, when the standard rotation occurs and they lose Thunderbluff Valiant and Totem Golem and Tuskar Totemic and a bunch of that stuff, then sure, there could be some merit to it. But even then, there's all these good overload synergies. You're going to go back to playing your, you know, 4-mana 7/7s, and you've got all, like, Shaman isn't short for options right now. They're always going to have Thing from Below and Flame Wreathed Faceless and all this stuff that really feels very powerful. So the idea of playing a 7-mana 5/5 in Shaman to get a Jade Golem feels kind of like it won't be as significant. And in Rogue, I just don't know that it makes sense. Like, Rogue always felt like it was kind of a weird outlier with these two classes. It kind of feels like it doesn't fit super thematically. And there's only really the two so far cards that do it, right? Jade Shuriken and Jade Swarmer. And it's, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like it's enough. Like, If you run the math in your head real fast with the cards that are available, Shaman can get up to about a 12/12 Jade Golem, and Rogue can get up to like a 6/6 or an 8/8. I don't remember off the top of my head with the neutrals. So it's not actually going to be a really meaningful mechanic as it stands in any class other than Druid. And that's the thing that I think sucks about it, is from a playability perspective, the only place I see this mattering is in Druid, if you're playing a matchup where you expect to see the game go, you know, up to fatigue or close to it, where you can afford to really abuse cycling Jade Idols and sustaining over a long period of time using the other Druid taunt minions and effects until you can just slam down massive Jade Idols and get big Jade Golems, and that's your win condition. So, like, design-wise, love it. Execution-wise, I'm not sold, not gonna lie.
So, okay, I want to say something here, but you know what? No. I'm gonna wait. JR, what do you think? What do you think about Jade Golems?
I really like the mechanic just because I think it sounds like fun, and the first deck that I'm going to create will be a Jade Golem deck. I think of all three mechanics, it is my favorite one of the three factions. So that's what I'm going to definitely do. I think it's that one. And then I actually really like the Grimy Goons, even though no one else does. I think I can build some fun decks around the Grimy Goons. And my least favorite has been Cabal, other than Kazak is a really cool card that might be fun to play around with. But I like the idea of kind of doing the whole slow roll thing and then building up these giant, huge minions until your opponent just concedes because they're like, well, I'm going to lose now, because they're just going to keep putting out these huge minions that I can't deal with anymore. because I've already used up all my removal at this point. But Kevin did hit the nail on the head on one thing that I feel like the only class that it really feels like it works with is Druid. And the biggest reason for that right now is because it just fits in with Druid and what Druid is doing right now, where you can fit in these Jade Golem cards with Druid decks that exist today by just swapping out a few cards and making it into a Jade Golem card. You can make your Malygos Druid, you can make your Yogg-Saron Druid with these Jade Golem cards and still work like, you know, these powerful decks that are already out today. Whereas with Rogue and Shaman, like, you're not going to see Shaman running this until possibly when Standard rotates, depending on what they get. And Rogue, it just doesn't feel like it's going to really work well with Rogue. So that is the unfortunate part, like Kevin said, is it feels like Druid is, it's going to slot right into Druid and be pretty good. And I think that's the deck I'm going to make out of it. But I do like the mechanic as a whole, though. Maybe when Standard rotates, we'll see more of this with the other two classes. But right now, it's going to be pretty Druid heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it for a couple different ways. Like, I think the most valuable piece of this isn't so much the stats of the second minion. Yes, that is important. Yes, that is great. But how often does Druid play two minions on a turn? Right? Just not very often. So, sure, the first or second time you play a Jade Golem card, yeah, you're right. You're a little bit slower. You maybe get 3-4 for four. I think there's a 2-3 for four for Druid. I might be wrong, though. There is something there somewhere. Or like a 3-6 for six with Taunt, right? That's not especially, you know, if that's the first one you played, you essentially get 4-6 worth of stats for six. Not great, not awful, but not great. But after that, you know, that third or fourth one, you're right. You start to kind of steamroll a little bit without going. And I think that is where we're going to see most of the danger come in. It's not that you're getting, you know, whatever Kevin used, you know, 5-5. So you use, you know, 8-11 worth of stats for six mana, which is great. I honestly think that a lot of the value comes from the fact that you've got 8-11 spread across two minions that, you know, that are going to be a little bit tougher to deal with, especially when you're playing against Druid, where, you know, it's you're not especially, you know, expecting multiple big drops coming in a single turn. So I think that's something to look for. And I think Rogue might have a few tricks up its sleeve with like Shadow Step, and other, you know, other cards like that, where you can bring it back into your hand and then play it out again, you know, duplicate it, gang up. Druid basically has a gang up card, you know, a Jade Idol, which is choose one, summon a Jade Golem, or shovel three copies of this card into your deck. It's kind of a gang up type mechanic, except does gang up only work on enemy minions? I don't think so.
No, gang up is any minion that's on the board.
Okay, I had to make sure. So I think there's some exciting things there for Rogue. For Shaman, yep, you're totally right. At least until the majority of good cards cycle out of Standard, I don't know if we'll see people. It's not that I don't think Jade Golem couldn't be good in Shaman. I just don't think that it would ever be better than what we have now until those cards cycle out. Once that has changed, who knows? There's some exciting kind of slower Shaman cards that have been released. We're going to talk about one of them in a second, but last thoughts on Jade Golem?
You know, the one thing that's really cool about it is going to make people, I think, have to really reevaluate removal, because unlike a lot of the death rattle driven stuff or buff driven stuff that's going on in the game right now. Yeah, so you hexed my Jade Golem. I don't care. I summon a new one the next turn and it's even bigger. Like, you don't get to do the same things to Jade Golems that worked on C'Thun decks, that worked on, you know, buff-driven decks where you blew up a really massive Edwin Van Cleef or a really massive questing adventure. Maybe everybody tries to run hard removal to get rid of one big Jade Golem, right? They need an Assassinate or a Deadly Shot or whatever, but that only works once. So Jade Golem becomes this kind of never-ending oppressive late-game strategy for any class that can survive long enough to make that a priority. And I'm looking at classes like Druid, where you've got Healing Touch and Moonglade Portal and stuff that can actually sustain long enough for that to be an option, and thinking, yeah, that's going to be something that just a lot of classes totally run out of steam to answer. That's the part of it that really excites me.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you're going to run out of removal if you play a Jade Golem deck. If you don't beat them early and it gets to late games, you're just going to lose because you're not going to have the answers.
Yep. Okay, let's review some cards, because we are an hour into the show. We have not started. Oh, man, do we even have time to do this?
Yes, we do. Shush.
We're gonna at least start with the neutrals here. So we've got a few exciting ones that have come out. So first, White Eyes. This we were talking about a little bit slower shaman cards, you know, control type shaman cards. This is one of them. White Eyes is a 5-mana 5/5 shaman legendary. Reads: taunt, death rattle, shuffle the Storm Guardian into your deck. The Storm Guardian is a 5-mana 10/10 with taunt. So essentially you're getting 15/15 in two bodies for 10 mana. Kind of interesting. It's kind of reminiscent of what we saw with Elise Starseeker. But you don't have to draw three different cards before you get the value from it. You only have to find one. So, okay, let's talk about this one here. JR, what do you think about White Eyes?
I know a lot of people seem to be up in arms about it because they're like, oh, it becomes a 5-mana 10/10, and all the memes behind, you know, the whole 4-mana 7/7, yada, yada, yada. On the board, a 5/5/5 taunt is okay. It's not the greatest card in the world. If you are playing any kind of silence, obviously, you're going to get rid of that death rattle. But it shuffles back into your deck, and you don't know when your opponent's ever going to get it. And you know that it's going to be coming at some point. So you're going to save your removal for that 10/10 when it comes back out. And they just spent, you know, 5 mana to get it out for something that you knew was coming and is going to end up dying unless you've had to use your removal for other things in the future. Or in the past. So I don't see it being that great. I don't see it going into any existing shaman decks, really. Maybe mid-range shaman, maybe. But I don't. I think it's too slow. If Jade Golem ever does become a thing with shaman after standard, this could potentially be good, because then if it gets shuffled back in later, then they may not have that removal to end up removing your 5-mana 10/10. Because you have these Jade Golems that are coming out and causing havoc as well. So it's one of those cards I don't think is going to see a lot of play to begin with. But I know a lot of people think, you know, it's really good, but I'm not one of those right now. It could be good in Jade Golem deck, but I don't see it in any existing deck currently that Shaman runs.
Kevin, what do you think? I've got a feeling that you've got some thoughts on this one.
Well, I think there's two things to consider, right? One is JR's right. It doesn't belong in any existing shaman archetype. I think that's the point. I think Blizzard is really hoping to open up new ways to play shaman for people who want to go a different direction. Maybe a control shaman that doesn't need to rely on basically having nothing but board clears and hoping that they exhaust all of their opponent's resources. That's a place where maybe Jade Golem makes sense, right? It's a way for you to develop a board after you've slammed down all of your massive AoE removals and cleared the board and used Halazil to heal yourself up. Like, it feels like they want some new different options to be available for shaman. So I think that in that sense, it makes a lot of sense. It's a good card that kind of gives shaman some late game legs, and it's something you're going to feel really good about drawing into in the late game as you're kind of cycling and looking for those last minute answers, because there's not a lot of things in the game that answer a 10/10 taunt. The other thing I think is interesting about this card is it's one of the cards that to me really strongly suggests that Blizzard is trying to get people back into the habit of thinking about teching their decks for big, powerful, scary death rattles and big, powerful, scary effects again. Because I haven't seen, and you guys can correct me if you've had a different experience, but I haven't seen anybody play Silence in ages. I very rarely have ever seen Polymorph. You see Hex in Shaman right now a little bit, but you just don't see those removals that also shut down death rattle effects or bodies. And I think that's something that Blizzard actually wants to see come back a little bit, is that part of your decision-making strategy should be, I can't just flood the board with minions. I can't just play my deck the way I want to play it without any thought to the consequences of popping a major death rattle. So I need to take, and I need to tech my deck for, you know, the one polymorph I'm going to use to answer that big minion when it comes down. If somebody plays White Eyes and doesn't get the death rattle, that sucks. Like a 5/5 for 5 and you get no other value out of it, that's awful. It's terrible. There's so many better things you could have done with that 5 mana.
Is playing a 5/5 for 5 without getting the death rattle really that bad, knowing that they had to use some sort of silence effect or an entomb or something like that to take that out of their deck? Is it that bad? Like, I totally get what you're saying. But isn't there still validity in, you know, using some sort of silencing removal to get that out of there so you don't have to face that 10-10 later on?
I mean, I think the reality is that if you're playing the kind of deck that White Eyes fits in, you need that death rattle. You need the additional card. You need the big value minion that you can play at a lower cost. That's the only reason to play the card at all, right? And if you're going to build a deck that relies heavily on having that as part of your late game stop show, you know, win condition, it has to come through for you or you're in a lot of trouble. That's where having polymorphs and hexes and silences come back could become a thing. And that's something that I actually think makes a lot of sense. I think this set in particular has given Blizzard the opportunity to say, okay, we nerfed Silence. We nerfed Big Game Hunter. We wanted for people to be able to play their big minions and see the effects go off. Now, people just don't play around them at all, right? People just don't care. They just trade minions and they just use their own win condition cards.
So you never have to see them.
They don't think about the consequences of what, you know, what happens if my opponent can cheat out a whole bunch of massive Jade Golems towards the end of the game and I don't have lethal lined up. Like, this is going to force people to actually hopefully think about deck tech a little bit. And it's got some cool synergies with some of the existing control archetype cards like N'Zoth and stuff that already exists. So I'm not going to play it, I don't think. I don't see myself wanting to play Control Shaman, especially not after the year of Shaman 2016, but I do think it's kind of a neat concept, and I think it asks some cool questions.
Sure. Okay, I get that. Anything else you want to add to White Eyes, JR, now that we've gone around the horn?
No, I think sweet. I've said my piece.
Okay, well, let's talk about this next neutral legendary, Sergeant Sally. That's what my in-game code name for Kevin is, Sergeant Sally. So Sergeant
Sally. Hey, mine too.
Sergeant Sally is a 3-mana 1/1 neutral legendary. Reads, death rattle, deal damage equal to this minion's attack to all enemy minions. All right, let's talk about Sergeant Sally a little bit. Kevin, because it's your code name, I'm going to actually let you go first on this one. What do you think about Sergeant Sally?
I think this is super cool. This is definitely one of the cards that I'm most interested to see how it plays out, because it, again, this is exactly the same thing I was just talking about. This is a big, scary death rattle, and you can't afford to not answer this. Like, if this comes down and your opponent has to wait a turn to activate it, you want to take responsibility for choosing how to deal with it before it gets buffed by something as simple as an abusive sergeant or a blessing of might or some other cheap way to make it into, you know, a 2-mana shadow flame. And it's accessible to every class. This is going to show up, I think, all over the place. All kinds of buff decks, all kinds of Reno decks. It just becomes this super consistent way to have an extra emergency way to clear the board. And it only affects your opponent's minions, which is crazy to me. Like, if this was a board sweeper, the way that something like Explosive Sheep used to be, then sure. But this is actually a targetable thing where you can say, okay, if I can hide this, my opponent doesn't clear it because it's protected behind a taunt or something, and I can buff it in any way, whether it's gotten a Grimy Goons buff in hand, I can play a spell onto it, whatever. Now it's one of the scariest removal cards in the game. The fact that it comes down as a 1/1 for 3 is kind of not great, but I think a lot of classes have really good ways to make this very effective. I'm definitely expecting this to see a lot of play. I'm really excited by it. I really hope that people think very carefully about how to use this card, because it's going to open up a lot of opportunities, especially for classes where dealing with multiple minions is one of their weaknesses. This is a great card for your rogues and your druids and any class that has traditionally struggled with clearing multiple bodies off a board.
Yep. I think the very intriguing part of this card for me is not so much the death rattle. Like, yeah, it's devastating and you have to deal with it. It's the fact that you are controlling your opponent's cadence and how they can deal with your minions, right? They can't just, oh, it's a 3/3, so I'm just going to kill it off. Like, you know, you have to, you know, kill whatever else is on the board, making that a 3/3 before you do that. Otherwise, you know, you're going to take that extra damage. So I think that there's some really exciting use cases to this. For me, I don't even want to say this because it might end up being just totally dumb. I want to see what Warlock can do with a card like this. I think that there's some pretty cool stuff. Some of it does require it staying alive for a turn, but, you know, power overwhelming, right? You know, double PO, 9 damage to the face, and then it, you know, dies. And
you can even power overwhelming without getting the damage in and just clear their board.
Yeah, it's just a super easy way to clear the board. I think this card is going to see a ton of play in Paladin, right?
Yep,
throw it down
my
behind
second one.
What's the Darkshire, whatever, the 3/3 that gives them Divine Shield.
Ooh, Divine Shield Paladin. Because
you can put
there's
it down,
like
guarantee it survives,
stuff,
right? Yeah. And then you're going to hit it with Blessing of Might or Blessing of Kings, or you played it after you equipped Sword of Justice. Like, Paladin has so many ways to buff stuff, and it's one of the Grimy Goons classes. Like, this is going to be how Paladin gets around having to always have a quality Consecrate to answer a board.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's one of those cards that I feel can fit into a lot of different archetypes. Like, I can see playing this in a aggro heavy deck and using it as a way to control their side of the board while still, you know, hitting dudes with going to face and things like that. I can see it being used in a control style deck. I can see it being used in Warlock Zoo. I can see it being used in almost virtually any Grimy Goons deck that you decide to make. There are a lot of different things that this card can kind of sneak its way into. It can definitely be a tech card. It can definitely be a card that you put in with a couple other cards for removal possibilities, and those couple other cards could help you also elsewhere, things like that. There are a lot of use cases for this card to find its way into a deck, and that's why the card is kind of pretty exciting. Plus, I wanted to say that this had the best card reveal of anybody. It was done by what's his name? Six Games, I believe is his name. And he did a whole like 20-minute lore video to reveal this card. And it was really good. And I recommend to go watch that if you have 20 minutes, because it was done amazingly well.
Nice. One more thing I wanted to add to this, and I was just thinking about this now, right? Arcane Explosion. So the worst case scenario, outside of it just getting removed without the death rattle, which even then honestly might even be better than this, but it's worst case scenario-ish. Is that it's an Arcane Explosion with a 1/1 body, right? Which for 3 mana is actually pretty fair, right? I mean, 1/1 for 1, not awesome by any means, but there's plenty of cards with stats for worse. And then you also get the Arcane Explosion on it. Obviously, there's a lot more best case scenarios, so I'm excited about this one. I think it could be pretty interesting. As we go in and see, and more, I think even more, what it looks like a year from now, or, you know, a year and a half from now, and we've seen 3-4 other sets come out that could maybe utilize this card even more. So, yeah. Kevin, you're going to hate me.
No, don't do it.
We're not doing it. We're not going through the rest of these 2 weeks
in a row.
Cards.
You're killing me.
2 weeks in a row. You know what? Let's not talk about Arena so much, maybe. And we'll go. I'm just kidding. I don't know what we talked about. It happens talked every week. Rogue. It happens every week where it's hard for me to tell where we went wrong in time management. But I think this is a fun show. We get to chat a little bit about Rogue. We get to chat a little bit about Arena. You know, I feel good about this. So let's get out of here. Let's do it. So, thank you guys for joining us for episode number 87 of Well Met. I think this was fun. If you have thoughts about the show, you have some thoughts about the cards, anything else, send us an email, wellmet@blizzpro.com. We would love to hear from you. We do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. Again, thank you so much for your support of the show. If you like the show, want to support it, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. All right, Patreon. What do we got going on for Patreon this week, Kev?
Nothing special on the Patreon this week. We don't have any new members of the Well Met family to talk about today, but we are hoping that you guys are excited about our upcoming milestone for another bonus show, like the Jeopardy episode we did with Disguised Toast. The Patreon has been really great, you guys. Like, I think we just have to really, really stop and say thank you to you guys. You know, Thanksgiving came and went for you American folks, and I think especially in that light, we're very thankful that you guys care so much about the product that we put out and the show that we come together to do every week, that it means something to you to kind of kick a few bucks back in and help out. That money has helped us pay for equipment to make the show better. It's helped us allow John to kind of focus on doing this as his career, which is a big and kind of scary thing. So you guys are making a lot of stuff possible. It means the world to us. So keep an eye out for more updates on the Patreon. If there's something you'd love to see, I know we are discussing actively some potential changes to it coming up here very soon. But head over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast to get involved, or email us at wellmet@blizzpro.com with your thoughts on how we could make it more interesting to you to become part of the family.
Awesome. What do we got going on with iTunes this week, JR?
Yeah, so this week we did have a 5-star iTunes review all the way from Sweden, from Mr. Joel Fabianson. I have no idea if I pronounced that correctly, but I hope that I did, and I hope that I didn't offend you by mispronouncing it, because that is a pretty awesome name.
If I understand this correctly, and this is truly his name, and I understand, like, Norse naming conventions, this means that at some point there was a person in Joel's lineage named Fabian, and or Fabians, probably Fabian, and he had a son, and that's how they got the last name. And you go, you know what? I'm gonna keep that. So
yeah,
right. I think that's how 100%
sure. Yeah, no, I think you just stated a 100% fact without knowing anything about this guy.
You're welcome.
I'm with you.
I'm happy to teach you about your lineage, Joel. Because
this has been Ancestry with John.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for next week's episode where he tells us where Horstman comes from.
It reminds me at my last job where, no joke, at least 3 times a day, some you know, I don't want to call them an old lady, but some person who is further on in life is super, super concerned switching from, a operating system that resembles a clear door to the outside that has screens, you know, to move to a new operating system that represents a fruit. And they would always ask me, is my ancestry going to transfer over? Every time I was just like, I can't do with this today. Anyways, sorry, tangent yet again. Thank you, Joel, for your 5-star review. If you like this show and you want to support, maybe don't want to or don't have the finances to, you know, support it monetarily. Obviously, listening and coming in for the live show is like first and foremost awesome. But you want to do something a little extra, head on over to iTunes or Stitcher, leave a 5-star review. We'll make JR read your name. And if you write something really funny in the 5-star review, I'll put that in the notes as well. And, you know, find a way to incorporate that. And then, yeah, we would really appreciate it. All right, let's get out of here. So, shout outs for the week. JR, what do you have going on this week?
Getting back to work because of Thanksgiving break and all of that. So I'm going to be pretty busy with that. I'm going to be putting up, hopefully a blog post this week on jrcook.net. It'll be .net related. So if you're not a nerd that's into programming, then you probably won't be interested in it. But if you are, go check it out. Other than that, just come to that live stream here in a couple weeks. I'll have more details on that and everything this upcoming week. I talked about it earlier in the show, so I'm not going to completely rehash it.
Cool. Kev, what are you up to?
Man, it's a crazy week. I have to get some major stuff going for work, and hopefully some of that will actually translate into something we can talk about here on the show pretty soon. JR knows what I'm talking about, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah,
some good stuff coming for you guys. So in the meantime, this week I'm going to be not available a whole ton. Sadly, I won't not going to be around much at all because I've got to work like crazy, and I'm actually going to be in Vancouver this coming weekend. So if you're a Vancouver area friend of the show and want to come hang out, I'm going to be at the Elements Winter Challenge. It's an event that my company's hosting down at the Elements Casino. There's a Street Fighter V tournament and a Hearthstone tournament actually at the event. And I think the tournament slots are full already, but there's a viewing party for the Capcom Cup, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So you can look it up on Facebook or hit me up on Twitter at Lack of Realism. Let me know if you want to come or if you're planning on being there. I'd love to see people and say hi. And I will be back in Saskatoon just in time to record Well Met the 88th next weekend. So we'll see you here next week.
Ooh, the big 88. The same number of keys on a piano. What do you know?
The same speed you had to go on Back to the Future to go back in time.
Look at that. We're full of knowledge this week. I love it. As for me, I am streaming full time at twitch.tv/kickedtripod. I've actually changed my streaming schedule. So I used to do like 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening. It was just kind of hard to do. And I was doing it to try to decide, you know, do I want to be a morning streamer or an evening streamer? I want to be an evening streamer. So I'm going to be streaming from 3 p.m. Mountain Time to 9 p.m. Mountain Time. 5 days a week. Right now it's every day except for Monday and Wednesday, but once school gets finished up, that'll be changing again. But that's where I'm at. So come hang out. We had a lot of fun, and yeah, it's always a lot of fun. I play console and I just wreck people. I am the best Soldier 76. According to Master Overwatch, believe it or not, I love to brag. People love it when I brag. Just kidding. I am the top 3% in Soldier 76s on Xbox for KDs and damage per game. So that's pretty cool. All right, let's get out of here. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Well Met. Join us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro to get in on the conversation. And follow the show on Twitter at Well Met Podcast for additional news and updates. Well Met is exclusively supported by our fans. If you love the show, you can find out how to become a part of the family at patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. You can also find Well Met apparel at store.blizzpro.com. And a special thanks to Jake Buttonow for our music and Scythe Designs for our graphic design. This has been episode 87 of Well Met. We'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Well Met is a production of BlizzPro.com. The show records live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. To get the latest news and information about the show, follow us on Twitter at Well Met Podcast or join us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/WellMetPodcast. If you would like to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast.